And you're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Halaiva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we will indulge in the king of fruits. Get down and dirty with hose and other garden groomers, and network with symbiotic mushrooms. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo power equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
Yes, and we do enjoy that Edible Hawaiian Islands magazine. It's such a beautiful publication, and they're so good about highlighting the gardening and farming efforts of our local community. So we thank them so much for just bringing that that lush, beautiful presentation of our work to the wider community. And it's In the Garden on the Farm. Robin.
Yes, here we are.
How you doing?
Excellent. You know, I'm loving the sound of that rain right now. I wish it were real.
Well, there was a pretty big rainstorm down on the south side today.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was going to be a rainy day, but not the case up here on the North Shore. We just got sun, sun, sun. Plenty of it. Good to see Mac in the studio. Coming out of the stables to spend some time. I hope you brought some manure for us, brother. Maybe so, on the heels of his boots at any rate. But we're here to enjoy the hour with you, focusing in on gardening, farming activities. And we'll start, as we always do, with our celestial session, looking to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance based on the amazing influences of the heavenly bodies. And none stronger than our closest heavenly body, the moon. And no better knowledge than the knowledge compiled and acquired through time by the Hawaiian practitioners of farming, fishing, and other activities. So the mahi-ai, the traditional Hawaiian planters' knowledge, coming to us today thanks to the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar and the Hanalei Watershed Hui. And today's Hawaiian moon phase is Ole Pau. Ole Pau rose over Kauai at 1:23 a.m. this morning. She reached her transit, or highest point in the sky, at 7:36 a.m. this morning, and she will set at 1:54 p.m. this afternoon. 36% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated today, and the last quarter moon was yesterday at 5:42 a.m. in the morning. Ole Pau is the last of three ole moons in the waning phase of the Hawaiian moon month. And regular listeners of the show or students of the Hawaiian moon will know right away this is not a day recommended for planting or fishing in the traditional system. It is windy and the tides run high, says time-tested knowledge. A good time for weeding, Kepalino alone recommends for planting. So there was one knowledge holder who said it was good for planting, but in general considered lazy days for farmers. So especially in this hot weather, maybe it's time to just seek out one of those shady nooks once you're sure that your irrigation is working properly first, and put your feet up and appreciate the work you've done to get you to this point.
Yeah, and relax and enjoy the show here with us today. Well, at the Biodynamic Look at Things, it is the ascending moon time, so energies are moving upward. And not the best time for planting either. Today and tomorrow, moon in Pisces, although today is considered unproductive as well in the biodynamic way, so yet a second reason to put your feet up and relax. Tomorrow, however, being the moon still in Pisces, it's a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leaf plants, so we can do constructive pruning at this time, or weeding. Friday through Saturday, the moon will be in Aries, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruit plants, so harvesting fruits that you might want to keep a little longer than normal, pruning again, and perhaps even some grafting if you've got some late buds that are waiting to come out and you want to look at some grafting. Sunday through Tuesday, the moon will be in the constellation of Taurus, an earth sign, making it time to work with our root plants. So once again, thinning. Good thing to do on one of those days, we've decided. And that's it. Mm-hmm.
And that pruning is as well is a good time for cuttings still?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
good.
Absolutely.
Good,
I'd say so.
Okay, very good. I've got a Wayusa bush that I'm really looking forward to making some cuttings off of, which is a leaf plant, beautiful tea and related to mate. So I'm excited to do some propagation on that. Thanks to Mateo for sharing that plant with me originally. A great plantsman. As well, I'm going to be making some ava cuttings that I prepared about a month ago that are all budded out. So
great.
Yeah. So good to know that the celestial influences are on our side. And so we take this time-tested knowledge and we combine it with modern-day knowledge. And this is why we're so fortunate this late day and age is to have access to such great information. And thanks to all the people who are working both on the spiritual realm, connecting with the plant spirits and the spirits of nature, the birds and the other spirits, as well as the scientists who look at the hard data and do the scientific inquiry and let us know about some of the things that can help us out, or maybe some of the things that we would want to avoid as well. And Robin's going to give us a follow-up from last week's story on the dangers of Roundup and further unfolding of some revelations that are coming to the fore.
Well, sure. Yeah, just some follow-up in the sense that after the World Health Organization released their study on glyphosate being probably going to cause cancer, was the results of that. Testing for glyphosate in consumer products since the release of that study have gone up substantially. And this is from the Acres USA magazine for this month. So it's pretty brand new. And already some things tested, such as honey, breast milk, and infant formula, have tested positive for glyphosate. So pretty sad that the infant formula, in my mind, that young children who developmentally are much more susceptible to toxins are, you know, being given this. You really want to reconsider perhaps what the babies are getting. But even having been found in breast milk and honey, you know, that's very interesting to me, too, because it's clear then that the bees are carrying it probably back to their hives, either through the flowers, the nectar of the flowers themselves, or just on their own very own bodies.
Which is interesting, because I would have thought that the glyphosate would have killed whatever plant it was. But here we see that it's getting into the food chain in unexpected ways. And, yeah, not listed as an ingredient if you look on the label.
Certainly not.
Packaged food, you're not going to see glyphosate listed. But it is an ingredient now. It is literally an ingredient in our food.
That's right. And it's not on the label. These are thought to be found there because of the explosion of Roundup Ready GMO crops in the U.S. Pretty much guarantees that glyphosate's in the food supply. So testing labs, according to this article, are experiencing a huge surge in requests to test foods, and even people are having their urine tested for glyphosate. And food companies, which were not named in the article, have submitted a number of products, including breakfast cereals and all the like, to get tested. So we're going to keep our eye on this story, or at least I will. And it's really just another really good reason to choose organic foods that have not been treated with glyphosate. And also island-grown food here, the locally food. So, you know, what's for breakfast? Glyphosate? Oh. No, I don't think so. I think I'm going to stick to island-grown fruits for my breakfast. And that leads me right to the farmer's market. And I'm going to do a little fresh picked story about, now this is so cool to me because we've just had such an explosion of lychee this year that often, and I've heard people say it, sort of common wisdom, that a really good lychee year is not really going to be a good mango year. Right. You kind of one or the other, but boy, the mangoes are there. They're out. And we talked a few weeks ago how the trees have been putting on a second flowering, kind of a second set of fruits, at least in my neighborhood where I've been noticing. So there was that early March flowering, which are yielding fruits that are appearing at the farmer's market right now. But the trees flowered a second time. Now, unfortunately, where I live, most of that second crop has been stung at a young age, and doesn't look like a whole lot of them are going to probably make it onto my plate.
And who's the culprit there, Robin?
I would say the fruit fly, one of the four or five that's here.
And they're stinging the
young fruits.
The young fruits.
Yeah, the young fruits, and then developmentally, the fruit just doesn't even get any bigger than, say, a golf ball. At least that's what I've been observing. Yeah. However, that first crop is out there, and there's a lot of them. So I'm pretty stoked that we're getting like a lot of lychee and a lot of mango all in the same year. Yeah. I'm going to consider that a really good blessing. And mangoes in the Anacardiaceae family, along with cashews, pistachios, which don't grow here, but also sumac, which is a poisonous plant. So want to definitely caution everybody. People who live here probably already know mango sap can burn you pretty bad. And you want to watch out for that when you're picking them. I mean, last year we picked fruits that as the fruit snapped off the stem, they literally spurted a stream of sap out, I mean, 4 feet away.
Whoa.
Like, pretty incredible the amount of water pressure, turgidity that's in there that could propel that sap. So when harvesting, and certainly when eating, we all love to just eat sweet mangoes out of hand, you know, and those who are sensitive can...
I've developed a particular skill of peeling them with my teeth, but not highly recommended.
Yeah, you must not be sensitive to the mangoes.
Not yet, at any rate.
But gosh, there's so many varieties out there, you know, the big round softballs or bigger that yield like flank steaks of mango, really, like
which are
Haydens.
Primarily the Haydens, yeah.
Haydens and Raposa, not to be overlooked, an excellent variety. Mm. I love the Raposa. That one is known for putting on second flowerings often too, which makes it a good choice since weather can be dodgy in March when they tend to flower naturally.
Can you identify them right off the bat if you see a Raposa mango?
Versus a Hayden? No, I cannot. Yeah. They're very, very similar to my eye. Yeah, okay. they're big. But another nice one is the Alfonso, which I believe are those long, mm-hmm. narrow ones that are more yellow-fleshed, and they are fine indeed. And they're all out there at the farmer's market. So if you don't have a tree and you're looking to get your mango fix, I can recommend that's a good place to go. Mango's offering us a lot of vitamin A, beta carotene, of course, in their deep orange and yellow colors that we see, potassium, vitamin B, vitamin C, even vitamin E, a pretty good source of vitamin E there in the mangoes. So when you're out there looking at the market, you want to choose fruits that have intact skins that are free of blemishes or cuts or stings. And mangoes will ripen a bit off the tree. So you want to choose if you want to eat it today, you'll get one that's a little softer and more ready. One of the worst things that happens with avocados for me and mangoes is letting it go a little too long on your countertop and you open it and you're like, oh, I missed it.
I think more than any other fruit, I find myself preferring a mango that is less ripe than is generally considered this fruit is ripe. If it's soft, it's already too far gone for me. I like them when they're more tart. They have a sweetness to them, but I definitely prefer them in that style. So I'm definitely looking for a different quality of mango, which is kind of nice because maybe they're not as picked over by people who really want them at their peak of sweetness, which is the softer.
Sure. Well, I'll take them any old way personally, and I've even been known to eat around the stings and pretty much anything. Mangoes, apart from being eaten out of hand, make a great chutney with some, you know, Indian style spices like cardamom and clove and the like, milkshakes, ice cream. These are all great summer things. Mango lassi, that beautiful Indian yogurt drink with some mango blended into it, is just heavenly. Fruit salads, or just slurping them again out of hand. So good. Anyway, indulge. I haven't quite hit my mango peak yet. We've had a few years without a good mango crop.
That's true.
So I'm just really reveling in it right now. And
tremendous.
I hope that you all will too. The green fruits, if you do pick one that's a little green and then doesn't really want to ripen, excellent for either pickles, pickled green mango, real specialty of the island here. Sometimes you see some stands on the side of the road, people who make them and sell them. But also, I just want to share a quick little recipe for green mango chutney, which you basically peel and de-seed, throw it in the blender or the food processor with some mature coconut meat, chili peppers, and cilantro, and you'll get kind of a grated relish type thing that is just good on anything. I mean, even just a tortilla chip. So that's something to do with green ones that don't quite make it to the mature stage.
Super cool. And not to take anything away from the farmers and the tremendous amount of diversity of these named varieties, but one of the most wonderful things is to encounter a mango, a wild mango, and we have the common mango as a naturalized plant here in the Hawaiian Islands, and many old trees out there in the forest to be discovered. And certainly for me, one of the most wonderful things is encountering a tree in the wild where you're not pilfering the fruit from anyone. This is a tree that may not even see another human visitation this season. And to encounter them when they're going off. An opportunity to gorge on mangoes in their natural habitat, if you will. And sometimes the flavor profiles of some of those wild common mangoes are so exquisite. So I'm actually, you're mentioning mangoes and the farmer's market. I'm thinking about going for a hike soon.
Yeah, well, I actually learned, which I'll share, a great little tip when I visited French Polynesia a couple of years ago with the common mango, which tends to be a little stringier and have more fibers in the fruit. So if you cut them and eat them, you know, often you can get strings kind of in between your teeth and whatnot. Well, I was taught to take a ripe one and with my thumbs very vigorously mush it. mush it, mush it, mush it, mush it, mush, 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 mush the whole thing all around the seed, and then nip the end off and just squeeze that mushed pulp. And you actually get most of the mango that way and not a lot of the fibers.
Oh, cool.
So next time you're out there birding it in the forest, maybe you'll consider giving that method a try.
Or at least bring your floss with you.
Yes, or bring your floss with you.
So, Robin.
Yes.
What's our feature today?
Our feature for today is cultivation and weeding. Ooh, everybody's favorite job. Don't you just love weeding?
Sometimes.
Sometimes it can be very methodical and put the mind at ease, I think, for me, for sure. Although we recommend getting those weeds out before they start making seeds.
Yes.
That's a big important factor on timing.
Or their root systems become a lot more difficult to weed them out.
That's right. That's right. A lot of these weeds have mechanisms for breaking off right at the ground level. And so you know.
They were expecting us.
They were. I believe that they have evolved to be survivors in that way. Ajaratum is one of those that I think of. That's the kind of hairy-ish leaves. And, you know, it's sold as an ornamental plant around, too. But
really?
Hawaii blue Ajaratum is like a common bedding plant.
Wow.
However, it has escaped into the wild, and usually the wild version has white flowers that I've noticed. Mm-hmm. And the seeds are just such fine little snow-like powder that I really do try to get those out. But a big plant will just, it'll just snap off right there at the base, and the small stem and root system intact will just grow right back. And
it's like the tail of a gecko, yeah?
Yes.
That helps it get away.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And there's lots of other weeds like that I can think of. And maybe just right off the bat, because when we do practice weeding, you know, what are you going to do with all the weeds? And some of them are really good to be composted,
yes,
whereas some of them we would definitely not recommend putting into the compost pile.
Right.
So again, the Ajaratums and those sort of little weedy dandelion type flowers, I seem to have no trouble composting them. And that one that's like a miniature snow bush, it's kind of got the latex. I'm not sure what the name is, but it's a very, very common garden weed. Those, I have no trouble just putting them right into the compost heap, and they get plenty of stuff on top of them, and they just rot down.
It said that they're such a good contribution to the compost pile sometimes because those weeds are so good at sort of mining nutrients out of the soil, at surviving or thriving under difficult conditions, and it's because they're so good at accessing the nutrients. So it's a phyto extraction of the nutrients that then you can turn into your compost and make really available for plants that maybe aren't so good at scavenging those nutrients on their own.
Sure. And even short of composting them, there would be a Korean natural farming method of actually extracting the juice out of them and using them as a growth booster for your cultivated plants because of that very reason. They've survived on their own. Now, I would definitely recommend doing those kinds of things again before mature seeds are formed on the plants.
Super cool.
Yeah. No plant. These are plants that I would not ever under any circumstance put into my compost pile. One of them would be nut grass. Do not attempt that, because you will just be spreading nut grass through your garden whenever you lay that compost down. Yep. Honohono too tends to, unless it's well buried in there, and Wydelia can just grow some roots and regrow. Mm-hmm. And other grasses as well can be a little bit dodgy in the compost. So if you're not into just completely removing them from the place altogether, rotting them down in water, even in a kind of anaerobic situation, I experienced this with nut grass. We had a bed that was just covered. We put it in a big tank with a ton of water and rotted it down. And we used that water as fertilizer around on our bananas and other fruit trees. And even the pulp that was left in the bottom, which was the actual nuts, I'd left them sitting, you know, for a good month. It was very smelly. We put them down underneath our pomegranate tree, and it just went bonkers.
And they resprouted.
They did not know. The pomegranate tree went bonkers.
Okay.
And I did not have any nut grass sprout.
Oh, great.
So once well rotted down, and again, I know Joseph Dunsmore has experimented a lot with trying to do a fungal decomposition on nut grass with two good ends. Mm-hmm. It can be made into something good, but that one takes a little more of a process than just throwing it in the compost heap.
Right.
So enough about the weeds themselves. What's the technique? How do we keep our gardens weed free? Mm-hmm. For me, I start with mulch. Now, we discussed also that mulch isn't always the right thing, but that is certainly a way to keep weeds down and out of the garden. Mm-hmm. Weeds are trying to cover the soil. That's kind of their purpose. So if we cover the soil, we'll get less weeds because they won't have that job to do anymore.
Mm-hmm. So long as our mulch does not contain seeds,
yes,
it would sprout. And I know it's something that Sun and Lisa, who use wheat straw to cover their beds, they have to sprout the seeds first and let it basically happen not on top of their garden beds. Otherwise, they have quite a weeding problem, as one example.
Yes, but, and those bales of straw are varied. Some batches are extremely seedy.
Yep. And then other weeds, depending on where we're getting our mulch, we're back to the nut grass. Even if you didn't throw the nut grass in there, sometimes through, you know, landscaping processes, somebody else weeded it out and sent it to the green waste, and now it's coming back to you. So
that's right. And as far as fresh tree mulch goes, I mean, even when Java plums are in fruiting and the tree gets pruned, some of those seeds do make it through the mulching process, and you can get, you know, little trees sprouting up out of even wood mulch.
Right. So backing up a step, exhausting our seed bank to some extent before we actually plant our crop is a process that works really well. Nut grass, I know that's a standard practice, is to let that nut grass sprout and do maybe even a couple rounds, two or three rounds even, if you want to be a bit more meticulous, or depending on how much nut grass you have or other weeds that will sprout up when the soil is turned and all the activity gets going. It can be very helpful down the road is to do that. And of course, we can also be using solarization of the soil can be very effective as well in terms of cooking out those weed seeds too.
That's right. That's right. And also in the 70s, molasses was used as a weed control measure, which we also know can be effective at decreasing nematode populations. So kind of get a 1-2 punch going there if you decide to use a little molasses. But at any rate, if you've already got your stuff planted and it's growing, there are various styles of hoes that are really effective for weeding. I probably like the hula hoe the best. As long as there's ample space, it does matter how much spacing we give our plants, mm-hmm. because hoeing around them, if we're hoeing a little too close, we can nick them, and that can open up the plant to some kind of an infection or disease of some sort. So I'm going to be careful not to get too close to the base or the growing stalks of our plants when we're hoeing. But the hula hoe is a stirrup. It's a loop, right? Probably most people listening know this. And so it allows the soil to move through it very nicely. And in the great words of a good friend and a great gardener, Scott Pomeroy, you hoe before you see the weeds. So even if the bed looks like it's doesn't have any weeds growing, very likely they're just sprouting, and you can disrupt them when they're really very young. And if you get into spending about 10 minutes each day in your garden and just doing a quick little zip around, you will have way less weeding to do. I know that's not realistic for a lot of us, but for some of us it can. And then there's the traditional or classic hoe. I'm not sure what the name is it. Of it is really called, but it's that flat iron kind of. That one's good for hilling if we want to cultivate by hilling around certain things, and can also cut those weeds before they even really get started.
And that hot midday sun can be our friend as well if we do our hoeing in the morning time and we are casting some of the, we're disturbing these young weeds and maybe casting them out into the harsh sun. It's a good way to make sure that they're not going to survive through the day.
That's right. That's right. And then there's also collinear hoe, which is just basically a small, sharp blade, kind of a long, rectangular, really only an inch wide, but maybe 5 or 6 inches long. It's on a handle, of course. That's really good to get into tight spaces, really small spaces. And it really is just a, it's just a blade. So we can use that as well if the weeds are small and very, very young. That's when that particular tool works the best.
And while we are weeding with our cultivator, we're also doing a little bit of turning the soil. Perhaps we've laid a little bit of fertilizer down if we haven't put our complete diet of fertilizer in the ground all before planting, and we're doing some side dressing, if you will, then incorporating that fertilizer in at the same time that we're controlling weeds really plays a huge role in stimulating the plant's growth, in breaking up that hard crust on the surface of the soil, and incorporating the fertilizer and weeding all at once.
Indeed. Well, one of the best tips I got with root crops in particular in our gardens is from Elliot Coleman's book, The New Organic Grower, which is a fantastic read. And he practices soil blocking for how he does his starts. And so with beets and onions, which I know it's a little late for onion planting now, but we'll talk about beets. He puts 4 seeds per little cell. So he clusters 4 plants together and then leaves space for a hoe to get in between, and then 4 more, and then 4 more, and then 4 more. And so often with root crops can be the most tedious for weeding because your hoe will go in there and maybe destroy some of the young seedlings. By thinning to little groups like that, you can use a tool, because let's face it, you know, cultivating with a tool is a lot more easy than hands and knees and, you know, pulling out weeds. But you want to make sure you have minimal damage to your plants. So this strategy of planting those root crops in clumps, I thought was really brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Now, one root crop that you don't want to do this with is taro. Taro has lateral roots, widely spreading lateral roots that are very sensitive to damage. And when we damage the roots of our plants, we're also providing a place for nematodes that could infect the roots and radically decrease the health of the plant. It's sort of an introduction site that we've created. So best management practice for the taro is weeding only when the plants are very young and haven't created an extensive root system. Once they're older, it's best to really leave that area undisturbed and instead use the mulching technique that Robin was talking about previously.
Yeah, yeah, coconut mulch on taro, I've decided, is a really nice combination. It breaks down so beautifully, and it just seems to make the plants bulge. So with taro, then we're looking at a spacing of, you know, a couple of feet apart, yeah, so that there's plenty of room in between plants there. And once the leaves get come up, then they start to shade out any potential weeds that might want to try to grow up in between there.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Yeah, so while we are cultivating and thinking about the root systems of our plants, we are mindful of their health. We're wanting to encourage their health as much as possible in all ways. And there is a particular symbiotic friend of the root system of many different plants that we would like to talk about, but maybe not in this one.
Well, yeah, we'll get there. Something just came to mind that I thought I would share is another definition of cultivation is, of course, hilling. And I touched on it for a second, but I want to extend that conversation to, say, plants like sweet potatoes or... by now, we will have gotten our next year's crop of ginger and turmeric in the ground. And in the case of ginger and turmeric, when planting, as we've discussed in past shows, you want to plant them down deep into almost like a trench of sorts. And the seed piece will produce more rhizomes upwards towards the soil surface. So what happens is they start going up, and cultivating them means taking the soil that was left over from the trench that's on the sides now and covering them. So once the first new sprouts come up and the plant starts getting into real vegetative growth mode, cultivating them would mean moving that soil in towards. And so by the end, my ginger actually looks like it's on a mound.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another definition of cultivating. And of course, the same goes for sweet potatoes, who wind up on hills in that same manner as the vines start growing, and we start covering up the midsections of the vines and leaving the growth tips out to wander around.
Mm-hmm.
And we're cultivating by covering up the stems with more soil, which will, of course, inspire tuber growth,
mm-hmm.
which is what we really want with sweet potatoes.
Yeah. And you mentioned that coconut mulch for the taro, and if it is a very, of course, there's all states of decomposition of, it could be fresh out of the chipper, or it could have been sitting around for 6 or 8 months, and having that more broken down material laying right up against this extensive root system. And taro, as we know, grows from the bottom up. It's not a root like a sweet potato or a yam that pushes down into the soil. Rather, it is a swollen, modified stem of the plant that actually starches up from the bottom and grows in an upward direction, which means that the plant, kind of like banana too, does this, which kind of means that the plant is always coming out of the soil. And when we have roots like that, whether it be banana or taro, whether we choose to eat it or not, when it pops out of the soil, it is exposing itself. And more likely that a burrowing insect or other thing can get in and take our food away from us, or basically damage the plant. And so I've noticed that too, top dressing with compost, the times that I've had the most success growing taro is when I had a ready access to high quality broken down coconut mulch that was really more soil, and that I was able to top dress with that and then put other chipped mulch on top of that, and went to the trouble of then, in this dryland style of cultivating taro, when I wanted to feed the taro again, I would take a rake and very gently rake away the mulch to expose the compost by which point now the taro had eaten mostly, and it wasn't the taro itself, but it was the micro and macroorganisms that had been noshing on the compost, but certainly all of the nutrients that were released in the process was sucked up by the taro. So multiple top dressing applications of compost and then putting the mulch back. And Mac, who's sitting with us, helped out with some of those sessions as well. And it's a lot of work, and I'm not sure it was the most efficient way, but boy, did the plants respond to that level of cultivation.
Yeah, and you know, before we leave the subject of weeding, I also want to talk about other weeding tools that are hand tools, that are not pole tools that, you know, you stand upright. I mean, sometimes you just got to get down and do it. And there's so many different kinds of sickles that I like. But most recently, there's this small, I've been getting it at Kawamura's. I don't know if it's available anywhere else, but it's a very narrow, thin blade sickle. And I find that for my most delicate jobs where I don't want to damage any of my plants. And you know, when you were talking about taro, it reminded me how beets do that too. They kind of emerge themselves out of the soil as they're growing. They kind of expose themselves. And of course, right now I'm picking onions out of the garden too, and they're just globes just sitting on top of the soil surface. And all that's really in the ground are those feeder roots, the actual true roots. And hoeing in a situation like that with a stand-up hoe, inevitably I've nicked sides of the onions. And you know, when you've nicked a fruit like that, or a root, in this case, it's most likely not going to be a very good storage fruit, and it's something you're going to have to use right away.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to really practice not damaging the plants as we're weeding them, because, of course, that's not the idea. The plants are the stars of the show out there, and it's really all about them.
Yes. And this show is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here until 1 o'clock, at which time Kauai Vibrations is going to rock your world from 1 to 3. Not really sure who's stepping in. Tracy on International Destination Still, I believe. She's our official traveler here at KKCR.
Yes, indeed.
Our primary delegate to many nations. So we appreciate her bringing the passion of KKCR to foreign lands. 3 to 5, stay tuned for Shaka Kayaka and the Papule Show. And 5 to 6, I think it is, Kauai Surf Stories. Lots of great programming continuing all the way through the week. You can go to kkcr.org to see the full schedule, as well as make a tax-deductible donation. You can hear archived shows of In the Garden on the Farm, as well as our other community affairs programs here, Out of the Box and Kauai Soapbox Live, which happen Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 6 p.m. So you can live stream KKCR there as well. So and thanks to our listeners online. I know I should be able to look at this computer over here next to me and see who's listening, but we do know you're out there, and we do appreciate that you tune in to the show. And so there's always that, and then there's always tuning back into the plants. And we are going to turn now to our Secrets of the Soil Builders. And we like to share our secrets. It's great to keep secrets under some circumstances. Sometimes it's great to be given those secrets where you're the only one who knows, and you know this is a secret that you're going to take to your grave and never mention to anyone. But it's almost more fun to know those secrets that are like things that people should know more about. And so the Secrets of the Soil Builders, the nice thing about people who build soil is it's all about community, really. I mean, the work itself is about communing with the organisms. And then there's the community of people who love to share these secrets so that they can become more widely known. And one of the great secrets is mycelium.
Indeed it is. And specifically the mycelium of mycorrhiza funguses, which form mutualistic relationships with the roots of our plants to basically make them grow better, and we're going to tell you how and why.
Yes, indeed.
So firstly, basically in garden applications at least, just to take a scope on this conversation that's going to be most practical for us, there's endomycorrhiza and there's ectomycorrhiza. So ectomycorrhiza are mainly associated with woody plants, and they form their networks of mycelium, or their own roots, between the roots of woody trees and woodier plants, whereas endomycorrhiza actually are more associated with our herbaceous plants, and they send out a hyphae, or a small root that actually enters the actual root of our plant of choice.
Like a hypodermic needle, sort of.
Like
except one that stays there.
It stays there and then grows out into the soil from there to go forage for nutrients that the plant root would never probably get long enough to find. So you can see how this is a really great relationship.
Mm-hmm. And all this kind of thing is happening for millions and millions of years as fungi and our flowering plants have been co-evolving and learning how they can benefit each other. And so if we look in a natural habitat, when we look at the indigenous microorganisms of an area, no doubt there are a number of different kinds of mycorrhiza that are at work. And yet, when we're in the garden setting, we're in the farm setting, we're in the orchard setting, we may want to ally ourselves or, to make allies with particular kinds of mycelia that are particularly good at associating with our favorite plants.
That's right. And it's part of the evolution that happened is that particular strains or kinds of mycorrhiza have actually co-evolved with very specific plants. Mm-hmm. And often the mycorrhiza are named based on the plant that they associate with most or have been come to be known by.
Super cool.
Yeah. So yeah, good healthy soils should already have their own beautiful array of all different kinds of beneficial bacterias and funguses like mycorrhiza. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to inoculate, especially if we're cultivating new areas. We're pioneering into, you know, what was a cane grass field or, you know, something of that like where, you know, perhaps not a whole lot of activity was happening.
Right. And so to that end, there are products available that are utilized?
There are, and that's a little bit of a tricky topic because some of them are restricted for import into the islands here. And often some of the, you know, commercially available products are happen to have those very mycelium or mycorrhiza, excuse me, in there. So
I had just a moment with, because it belonged to a friend, but this morning I was looking at the Fungi Perfecti catalog, and they had a map of the United States showing different regions in relationship to something fungally related, and it excluded Hawaii. So I thought, an indication that perhaps, and I had heard that with this and other purveyors of mycelial products, that Hawaii is excluded from shipment of some of these products. So I didn't look super deep, but it did not surprise me that we didn't see Hawaii on the map.
Sure. Well, it does make me miss Aya's Garden because Greg, the owner there, had blended up his own Hawaiian blend of beneficial mycorrhiza was available. Definitely was really enjoying using that. For now, we're kind of in the shadows as far as being able to get it here. But basically, the fungus likes the carbohydrates and like glucose and sucrose that the plant is emitting out of its roots. Uh-huh. And then in return, the mycorrhiza goes way out there and brings some nutrients, you know, back in to the plant for the plant to utilize.
Well, again, not doing really detailed research on this particular aspect, but it's been a little while since I've purchased a mycorrhizal product, but not too long ago, I'd say a couple years ago or so, I was able to get something off of Peaceful Valley and Farm Supply. And it did seem like there were some products that you could not ship to Hawaii, yet there were some products that you could. So my assumption was that the State Department of Agriculture deemed some products to be acceptable and some not to be. So we want to let people know there are some products that you can legally purchase and get here.
That's right. And Garden Island Hydro is a good place to look for those. They do carry them, and they are under the watchful eye of the Hawaii Department of Agriculture. So I've been told by them that the list changes almost monthly of which ones are allowed and which ones aren't, and they're kind of always jumping through hoops just to get that product here on island for us. But it is available for purchase there and also on some websites. Right now I'm using one called Earth Juice, Reuters Mycorrhiza, because as I ran out of the Hawaiian blend, and it seems to be working great.
So another tool in the arsenal of the soil builder. Don't forget the mycorrhiza and its powerful effect on plant growth if you want just the best possible outcomes.
That's right. If you're potting things on in your nursery, you can add some of the granules just right into the potting mix. Or if you've got full-grown trees, what I've done, or not full-grown, but grown, you know, already in the ground specimens, I've used like fertigator-style water tanks with mycorrhiza diluted or dissolved into the water and pumped right in through the irrigation system, right down into the root zone. And that's a way to get, if you're kind of turned on by this and you like the idea, but your plants are already in the ground growing, you still do have an option of inoculating them even after they're growing.
And I know some years ago, Hendrikus came to the station during one of our fund drives, and he was very generously giving away some of his products. And he had with him some mycorrhizal products that came in a giant gelatin capsule, like a huge, like almost the size of a baseball, that you would dig holes around the drip line of a tree that was already in the soil. And like a gigantic vitamin pill, you would deposit these in the holes, and apparently it was a super boost of mycorrhizal power. So
far out.
Be interesting to see if that product is still around. And just before we get to the announcements at the end of the show, I want to give thanks to the students of Pu'ukumu School who came out to the Kauai Food Forest and the Seed Bank this past last week. Aroshin and I welcomed the students and the great staff there, some of which run the Kauai Nature School, but then also main staff at Pu'ukumu. And we had a really great time connecting with the students and in a bit of a way seeing these resources through their eyes. Although we were there to share a lot of information, we certainly got a lot of information just from their experience. And so thank you so much, and it was great to have a boost of energy in that direction. But we are out there on a Saturday at the Kauai Food Forest there in Kalihiwai, just a half a mile past half a mile up Kahiliholo Road on Kalihiwai Ridge Road there, and more information at ribg.org in terms of directions. To be in touch with us, 652-4118. 85 fruit trees planted, lots of bananas, different varieties of bananas. And we've done a lot of maintenance on the food forest recently. If you haven't seen it in a while, it's in pretty good shape. There's a lot to see, including in our nursery, which is bursting with beautiful, healthy plants that are ready to go into the soil there. So we're definitely densifying the spectrum of plant diversity that we have planted. We're also replanting a lot of our nitrogen-fixing trees. Our next round, we have a lot of Sesbania of two different species. We have a lot of pigeon pea that's ready to go in the soil. And we're encouraging people to consider adopting a small portion of the food forest to care for. It's a pretty big space for us to maintain, and we're really wanting to inspire people or expose people to the beauty of this place and invite people to consider a bit of a longer term relationship, even if it's just over the summertime or leading into the future. It's kind of an open-ended invitation to get involved at whatever level you feel inspired. There's people there each and every weekend that have spent time out in the forest and have a lot to share. There's a lot we've learned. And if you're interested to learn about this dynamic food growing system that's experimental but based on nature's forest system, we would be very excited to have you join us. So again, give us a call if you're interested, or you may have already been out and this is a kind reminder to you to come on out and join us again in the Kauai Food Forest. And we're looking forward to spending time out there with you.
So, Paul, tell me, I know the bananas sounds like they've been doing quite well out there. What are the other trees that you'd say are just doing the best out of everything?
Well, it's great to see when you plant so much diversity, you really get to see what thrives without too much care. And then, in a way, it's almost like you can come and see, hey, what are good plants to start with? You know, what are those plants that are just going to thrive even if you're not babying them? And then you can see, oh, this is what a plant looks like when it's, maybe a bit more finicky. And so at any rate, to answer your question, I'd say Ohia Ai, the mountain apple tree, extremely vigorous. We did plant some seedling avocados. Those are probably our most vigorous and largest specimens are the avocado, which of course is just a naturalized species here on Kauai. Jackfruit has also jumped considerably in size. Really across the board, it would be almost easier to state the things that haven't done well as the ones that have. I mean, it's trees, once they get over competing some of the tall grasses, which are our biggest challenge there, but once a woody tree gets above the guinea grass, they're really able to thrive and expand, especially since we've cut back our nitrogen-fixing trees to allow more sun into the system. And I'm always inspired when I go out there and just feel like I want to share that excitement with people, and I kind of don't do that part enough. I don't share the excitement of how well it's doing and wanting to share the vision of what it'll be like in 5 years and 10 years. And so much food's going to come out of that place, but so much learning and so much of just the spirit of being in this beautiful forest is what I want to share with people today. So
sure. Well, you know, it happens to me, and it's unfortunate, is sometimes I get in the headspace where I can't really just enjoy and appreciate the garden because my gardener's eye just sees work. It sees everything that's wrong and right. What needs to be done.
Yes.
And it's a little bit of a quandary for me about gardening, you know, is trying to keep my mindset to where I can really appreciate the beauty and not just focus on the problems. The problems sometimes are serious. They need to be addressed right away. They're going to take a lot of work. And I guess I was asking because I believe you put some citrus in there.
Mm-hmm.
And citrus in my world has always taken kind of a painfully long time to really kind of get going.
Right.
They seem a little slow out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And then they grow fine when they're a little bit bigger. But mm-hmm. getting them from that firstly planted stage to where it's about a 10 or 12 foot tree is with a nice full, you know, body on it is a long and slow process. And there's a lot of things that happen like scales and black molds and, right. you know, stuff like that.
Well, we had a considerable head start thanks to the good folks at Kauai Nursery and Landscaping who donated a number of citrus and other fruit trees some years back to different community garden projects. And so these citrus were already kind of on the bigger side. And while maybe not the best sellers because they were in such large pots and actually command a much higher price when they're in a bigger pot, but they had done a lot of growth already. So we were really jump-started on a lot of our citrus trees. And from early picking of the fruit, definitely seems that we need some more phosphorus applications. The fruit, not as sweet as we'd like, certainly not an error of the plant itself, but we need to do some more soil management to make sure that the proper nutrients are in place. But we're going to be doing that through time. And again, thanks to everyone who's donated great time, effort, plants, and your support for the Kauai Food Forest. And Tracy's in the house. She's back. So we're going to just put a couple of announcements out, and we're going to turn the helm over to Tracy and Kauai Vibration. So please stay tuned for the fond return of our beautiful Tracy. Yeah. So we want to let you know that tonight is the Hawaii Farmers Union United monthly meeting. It's June 10th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the Anahola Clubhouse, starting with a locally grown and prepared potluck meal by you and everybody else who shows up. We'll also be hearing from Marta Lane of Tasting Kauai Magazine, discussing her Kauai publishing projects and the slow food movement in Hawaii. Ray, the chapter president, will also be giving us a presentation on soil microbiology, as well as updates on the local chapter, as well as state updates. And we'll also be getting an update on a member. There's a lot of member discounts that are coming online. The pesticide review panel on Kauai, the food hub in Molawa'a. There's an IMO workshop on June 27th and 28th coming up as well that you'll hear about. But if you don't happen to make it, I'll let you know that it is Korean Natural Farming Indigenous Microorganism Workshop, Saturday and Sunday, June 27th and 28th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., presented by Permaculture Kauai in Molawa'a in association with the Hawaii Farmers Union and Regenerations Botanical Garden. For more information, you can go to permaculturekauai.com or call Ray at 634-5412. And I know those seats are getting filled, so it would be timely to consider that. And we want to let you know that if you want your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. And we'd like to thank the other members of the In the Garden on the Farm team, our phone tech Mac sitting with us each and every week, and helping to stay connected with our listeners. We really appreciate that. Our engineer Jack helps us out quite a bit. Webmaster Laura Christine is responsible for putting the archives on the kkcr.org website, so thank you so much to her. And our station manager Dean, the board of the Keikahu Foundation, and all the great programmers. Our volunteer coordinator, Dove, does a super job. Just everybody here is pulling their weight, and we're really appreciative of the whole team here.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. We'd like to thank you for tuning in today, and we'll ask you to please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our life, on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha.
Aloha, everyone. And we're going to go out with some really fine music, but we're sure not going to do it in CD number one.
Okay. And this is from the new Xavier Rudd album.
Oh. This one's been in the truck, Robin.
I know. It's a little scratchy, but I think it's going to work. And this is the song he wrote about Hanalei. So.
Really?
Yeah.
I think we made an impression on young Master Rudd.
It was mutual.
Right on. Let's have a listen. Okay. Oh, yeah. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Anahola, K284AL Halaiva, K224CQ Anahola.